Hello and welcome to the first episode of the McCloskey Manganese Wrap, brought to you by McCloskey by Opus at Dow Jones Company. My name is Hlengiwe Motaung, and today we'll take a look at the manganese market from the South African perspective. In the spotlight is Jupiter Mines. Jupiter has a 49.9% interest in one of South Africa's largest mines, the Tshepi Borwa Manganese Mine in the Kalahari Basin of the Northern Cape. It is in fact one of the five largest manganese ore exporters globally, with current production at a run rate of between 3.3 and 3.5 million tonnes per year. The Tshepi mine has seen steady state production from 2014 and has since been a key player into the global steel industry. But recently, Jupiter announced its plans to dedicate some of its manganese ore into the electric vehicle battery industry by producing the highly sought-after high-purity manganese sulfate monohydrate that goes into lithium-ion batteries. This was revealed recently on the company's five-year strategy update. To unpack this further, we are joined by Jupiter Mines CEO, Brad Rogers. Brad, welcome and thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Firstly, before we get into the manganese sulfate update, let's take a look at Jupiter's performance. In March 2023, your ambition was to be the world's largest manganese producer by 2028. Can you give us an update on how this is progressing?
Yeah, thanks for the question. So we're a year on from that strategy being released. It is a five-year strategy, as you said, and we've been working on all four elements of that strategy since we released it. The first part of the strategy is around efficiency, so how we improve costs and lower risks from an operating perspective. Part of that is about logistics. I know we're going to be talking about that later on. The second limb is about getting Tshepi to an optimal level of production. It's a very long life mine. It's open cast. You've mentioned its current level of production. But for such a long life mine, open cast, we think that there's some work to be done there to determine if its production should be slightly higher than that. And we also have ambition to grow through consolidation in South Africa. The third limb is a sustainability strategy, which is something that the management team at Tshepi already do very well. And it's about Jupiter as a major investor in that mine, telling that story and putting out a plan aligned with Tshepi's own plans around what we're going to do next. And then finally, the last element of it, we'll be talking about a bit more in a moment about our battery grade market entry strategy. So very busy times over the last year. We're busy on all of those elements of the strategy. We've still got 4 years left to go.
Certainly a very busy time for you guys at Tshepi. And now to touch on to, you know, your strategy update that, you know, you released recently. You highlight your efforts to produce high-purity manganese sulfate. What is attracting you to the battery market?
Yeah, great question. So we've already got a really good business in Tshepi, and mostly our growth strategy is about growing our exposure to manganese mining, doing more of what we are already. This strategy to explore potentially entering the downstream market to produce battery grade manganese, we've focused on for a few reasons. One is we believe that there will be a market there, and that market for supply of HPMSM will be undersupplied for a period of time starting late this decade. We also think that as a large existing miner with some relationships that we have at a shareholder level, POSCO is our third largest shareholder, and POSCO will be a player on the buy side of this HPMSM market. And AMCI is our second largest shareholder, and they are a significant investor in downstream battery processing markets in North America. So we think there's an opportunity there. We think the economics are potentially attractive. And we think that we also have a few things going for us, which means that we're likely to be successful if we choose to take this step. It's a very new market, though. And so what we're doing, as you would have seen in the announcement last week, is doing first principles work. We're in planning stage here, but we're interested in it because we think there's going to be a market shortage and we think we're well placed to be able to assist in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Brad, there's a vast difference between the steel industry and the battery industry. And so I want to understand advantages that Jupiter has over others in the HPMSM market. What makes you stand out?
If you look at some of the companies that are looking into this space separate to Jupiter, many of them have to develop a mine, and that mine will be dedicated to supplying downstream upgrading to HPMSM. In Jupiter's case, we're invested in, as you mentioned, a very large operating long-life mine, and we're looking to use what we typically call low-grade ore, 32% manganese contained, in order to produce HPMSM, and that's the material that we've used for our testing to date. And so we're able to value upgrade, is the thought, take material that we're producing that isn't saleable through the steel cycle, but is useful and is suited to upgrading into battery-grade manganese. So that's one of the advantages, in addition to the scale that we have relative to some of those parties, as well as the strategic relationships that I've just mentioned.
And, you know, in terms of pricing, you know, I know you aim to be the most cost-efficient ex-China supplier. How will you compete, and, you know, what price do you need to make this investment viable?
Yeah, that's a good question. Firstly, we're not too focused on the current price for HPMSM in China, and that's because the demand for HPMSM currently is very low. There's about 200,000 tons of HPMSM produced annually, and 98% of that is in China. And the prices are low right now because, notwithstanding, the demand isn't that high. The supply is even higher. So that's a market currently that's in oversupply. And the cost that you just mentioned is really to sustaining existing production, much of which is produced from electrolytic manganese metal. So the demand that we're focused on that is going to lead to an undersupply in this market, we can see through the work that we're doing top-down through market strategy work, but also bottom-up through discussions with vehicle manufacturers, through battery manufacturers, really starts to pick up in about 5 years' time. And so we are of the view, and it's a consensus view from most analysts I've seen, that HPMSM will see an increase in demand and supply will lag. And so that will create a shortage of supply. And so there'll be a period of time where there will be a market shortage before processing infrastructure can catch up. And also be a need for an incentive price to incentivize new supply, both within China, where new supply is anticipated, but also projects outside of China. So we, in our scoping study, you may have seen that we have disclosed the pricing that we are assuming. We're assuming in the short run, for the period from 2028, when we are assuming we commence production, to 2035, there will be a price that we are assuming and require of $3,000 a ton, much higher than the Chinese price today. But that's about market for where most of the other participants, aspirants who are looking to get into this market are targeting the pricing. And that's for two, that's the incentive price that people need to invest capital in order to get a sufficient return. But secondly, there's a lot of discussions going on within parties within the market to find the pricing that would be suitable. So we are looking at an upfront price that's reasonably similar to what other participants are looking for. We then assume that this market matures, and at a point in time, sometime in the mid-2030s, we think there won't any longer be an oversupply of material and the price will settle. And for that reason, we have assumed in our scoping study that there will be a long-term price of $1,800 a ton. So again, still higher than the Chinese oversupplied market signal price, but reflecting what we think is going to occur in this market, and reflecting prices also, that people, including us, need to incentivize investment in this market, but also that we think will be achievable on a valuable basis for the demand and supply side of the HBSM market.
So certainly there is a lot of activity happening around the high-purity manganese sulfate monohydrate space at the moment, you know, with producers setting up for this high demand that you mentioned. So what will be the next step, you know, once the feasibility study is complete? I know, you know, it's going to take about 12 months to complete. What's next after that?
Yes, thank you. So you're right. The pre-feasibility study that we're commencing now will take 12 months. So dial forward 12 months from now. What we will be looking to do at the end of this period is to review the study work, which we will have then completed, which will be for this next 12 months, building a pilot plant, producing batch samples of material that we can share with potential off-take partners. We'll be refining our engineering work. We will be selecting a particular site to build the processing plant at, and refining in general all of our assumptions, including building a full funding model. So that will take us forward to the next 12 months. There will then be a decision for the Jupiter board to make based on the work that I've just described as to whether we to enter into a definitive feasibility study phase, which will go for a further 12 to 18 months. So this will now take us to the back end of next calendar year at the earliest. And that will be detailed engineering work and, you know, fully bottomed out commercial work sufficient to support a final investment decision. And that is the point at which we will decide whether or not to invest in this new business. And post that, you're into construction, which is estimated at this stage to be a two-year build. So all of that moves forward to targeting production in 2028, which is when we see in general this demand starting to take off and most of the potential customers that we're talking to start to require their supply around that time. So that's the broad timeline. But the next step would be after this one, moving into a DFS stage.
Now, let's talk logistics, especially on the current manganese ore business, Brad. You know, we've seen manganese prices from Port Elizabeth, from the port of Port Elizabeth, climb up in the past couple of weeks to above the $3 mark. What's the main driver behind this? And, you know, do you see the rally continuing? You know, if you could just give us your average price forecast for the year.
Yeah, so it would be brave to give you my manganese price crystal ball, but I can tell you what's been going on so far. You would have seen, and listeners would have also no doubt observed, that through the last 6 months to 31 December 2023, manganese prices were low and were close for much of that period to five-year low levels. Tipping sells off a 37% benchmark index. And to give you an example, FOB price for our grade of manganese got to $2.66 per DMTU in early December. IB low was $2.61, I think, in 2020. And when the price reached that level back then, it bounced and overcorrected on the upside quite quickly. That didn't happen in the manganese price in the 6 months period that we're just talking about. What you had was fairly unexciting demand levels globally in China, as steel demand kind of traded sideways, but there were large stockpiles in China that existed for most of 2023 calendar year. Yeah. And that was because of demand, as we just mentioned, but also large suppliers around the world continued to supply at normal levels. Toward the end of last calendar year, that changed, and that was because prices were so low that producers around the world, many of them, pulled back on supply. And so that resulted in less ore coming into the market because prices weren't incentivizing the levels of production being sustained at those levels. And correspondingly, it led to, during the course of January, those persistently high port stockpiles getting drawn down in China. So that is what has resulted in the increase in the manganese price that you just referred to, as compared to early December, again, for FOB prices at Port Elizabeth for our grade of manganese, which were $2.66 in early December. That's currently sitting at about $3.13 right now. What you've had at the same time is shipping rates being quite elevated. So those FOB prices would actually be a little bit higher than that if it wasn't for the fact that shipping rates are elevated by non-related factors that are happening in the world today. So the driver of the increase in the manganese price over that period of time that I have said has been supply-side constraints. Demand still hasn't really improved from the levels that it was at, but you had those stockpiles that were creating an overhang on the manganese price have reduced, and that was a result of supply. So as we sit here today with the manganese pricing I've just mentioned, it's still a bit lower than you would ordinarily expect. It's still lower than a 3 or a 5 year average manganese price. We still aren't seeing a strong pull through from demand, and that's what you would need to see in order to expect, you know, a higher than average price. But hopefully what we're saying is a, you know, a tracking back to a more ordinarily level, 340, 350, something like that. The balance of the manganese market can obviously be affected by not just normal demand and supply factors, but also any disruption factors that might occur in the meantime. But leaving those sorts of factors out, I would expect the manganese price to track up to, you know, higher levels than it is right now, whilst not breaking into very exciting levels unless there is a demand pull through or a big supply dislocation.
Mm-hmm. Brad, you mentioned, you know, increasing shipping costs. You know, at the same time, trucking costs are also increasing. And I know that, you know, the company uses a combination of, you know, both road and rail transport. I just want to understand at what ratio this is. And, you know, in terms of road, is it still affordable amid these high trucking costs?
Yeah, it's a good question. And it's a very pertinent question for South African bulk mining, as you know. So for Tshipi, as you mentioned before, in any given year recently and our run rate right now, we produce 3.3 to 3.5 million tonnes per annum. Our rail allocation from Transnet is much lower than that. It's been a little under 2 million tonnes for the last while now. So if you look at that production, we have a bit over half that is going on rail and the rest of it is going on road via various means to port. As you rightly say, road transport is more expensive than rail, obviously. And so the more that we can go on the rail, the better. We have, though, been profitable through the cycle hauling via road. What I would say in the last period of time where you see low manganese prices and some producers pulling back on production, that does tend to produce more rail availability for people who are still producing at normal levels. So there's some silver lining to the cloud of low manganese prices. You tend to see a bit of relief on the rail capacity side. Road is always going to be more expensive than rail. I don't see road trucking costs actually being higher than normal. They're probably lower than normal right now, and that reflects the fact that commodity prices, not just manganese, but other commodity prices that are relevant for South Africa have been lower. And so the demand road haulage, because it's not necessarily profitable for all producers to road haul at lower commodity prices, comes off, and road transport prices come off commensurately. Road haulage, I think, for South African mining, though, is a reality because there's not enough rail capacity to go around for the moment. And so our perspective on that is we want to keep producing at the sorts of level that we've just mentioned, and means we are going to have to contend with road haulage for the foreseeable future. And so part of our strategy is thinking about ways that we can road haul in the most efficient, lowest risk and responsible manner possible. And in with the fact that that method of transporting ore to port, whilst I have more rail, road haulage is a reality, and so we're thinking about ways we can engage with that reality for the time being and drive the lowest cost and the best risk profile that we can.
Absolutely. Lastly, you know, can you give us an update on rail allocations? Rail is undoubtedly a very critical component to your business, as you've just mentioned. How is Transnet going to allocate long-term rail capacity, you know, to major producers like Jupiter, while including more emerging miners as, you know, as part of their strategy?
Yeah, so that is probably a question for Transnet. How to do that, and just noting that the allocation is at Tibiat at the mine level rather than at Jupiter. The issue with rail from a manganese perspective, as I see it, hasn't really been one of performance. It's more that production from the Kalari manganese field over the last 20 years has grown, whereas the capacity hasn't grown. And so, you know, that has meant new emerging miners coming in, and they also would like to get some capacity on rail. That's a Transnet to fix. But just stepping back to that, from that question, South Africa is endowed with the world's best manganese resources. It's already a very, very valuable industry for South Africa. The more we can get on rail, the more valuable that industry will be, because it is more profitable to rail these tons than to road haul them, and it's also safer. And so we are supportive of more capacity being created by Transnet, not just for us, but for everyone, for those reasons.
Brad, thanks so much for your time and really laying it all out for us, you know, and we really wish you the best.
That's perfect. Thank you very much for your time and appreciate your questions.
That was Brad Rogers, the CEO of Jupiter Mines. Thank you for joining us on this first installment of the McCloskey Manganese Wrap. For more details, do follow our LinkedIn page, McCloskey by Opus at Dow Jones Company. See you again in the next one.